Hey everyone, and welcome to Social Sport. I'm your host, Emma Zimmerman, and this show is a member of the Sidious Mag podcast network. On this show, I feature conversations with endurance athletes committed to fostering social change. Okay, stick with me as I tell you something groundbreaking. Are you ready? Sports are not the center of the world, not when we consider all of the big topics and issues that exist in this world. But at the same time, sports are the center of the world. Endurance sports provide us with a great avenue to explore the topics that really matter, from climate change to mental health to equity and inclusion. So come along as my guests and I explore one question: how are endurance sports a powerful platform for social change? Big thank you to Ope Running for sponsoring the Social Sport podcast. Ope Running is an ethical running apparel brand designed and produced in Minnesota. The mission of Ope is truly incredible. Their performance apparel is high quality with bold colors and breathable fabrics. And this apparel is made especially for runners who care about their impact on our planet and the people who reside here. Ope even offsets the carbon emissions for every single order they ship. One of my favorite items of theirs is the Tiny Lil Short. Yes, all of their products have fun names like Tiny Lil Short. I have these shorts in the ocean blue color and they're super bright and breathable. I'll definitely be rocking them on the run, especially now that the weather is warming up. Go to operunning.com and use code SOCIALSPORT at checkout to get 15% off your order. Again, that's operunning.com and code SOCIALSPORT. Rahaf Khatib joins me on the show today. Rahaf made headlines in 2016 when she was the first hijabi, or covered Muslim American woman, to appear on the cover of a fitness magazine. Rahaf was on the front of Women's Running magazine, and since then, she has been featured in countless news outlets, and she has become a TEDx speaker, among many other accolades. In this episode, Rahaf and I cover lots of ground, but one topic that she mentions is the fundraiser she was working on to sponsor 10 orphan girls. Since we recorded a week and a half ago, Rahaf already met her fundraising goal, so you can no longer donate to Rahaf's fundraiser, but honestly, I think how quickly she met her goal is just another testament to how powerful and hardworking she is. There seems to be nothing this woman cannot do. So without further ado, here is Rahaf Khatib. Hello, Rahaf. So happy to have you on today. Can you start off by introducing yourself to the podcast? Tell everyone who you are, where you are right now, and what you're passionate about.
Hey, Emma. Thanks for having me. I am currently located in Michigan, about 20 minutes from Detroit. I live in Farmington Hills. Stay-at-home mom of three. I have a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And I blog on the side, I fundraise, I do all sorts of stuff on the side while I stay at home, take care of my kids.
You're very busy, it seems. And yeah. I mean, the three kids, are they all back in school? Back in school right now? They are. Okay.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was really feeling for all of the parents.
Yeah. During the pandemic. I feel for parents who have younger kids. That's super tough. I mean, if you have multiple kids who are younger, My kids are kind of self-sufficient and they're dependent. They're not as independent as they used to be. So it's nice. It gives me more time to focus on me and my blogging and my fitness and, you know, my freelancer life. So
for sure. Which we'll get into all of the incredible things that you do, but I want to make sure to give my listeners a little bit of background. I mean, you've shared your story in so many different places, mm-hmm. but my understanding is you moved to the United States as a baby from Syria. Mm-hmm. When you think back on your childhood, what role did running or sport in general play in your life?
It had no role. I didn't grow up with sports. I did not. You know, I wasn't any teams. I hated gym class in high school and middle school. I used to skip it. Every time we'd have a 2-mile run, I would skip it, believe it or not. It's really funny to me now thinking about that. But I've always wanted to try out for the volleyball team. I just never had anyone to push me to try out for it. My mom was an immigrant, and their focus for my mom and dad was not sports. Their focus was school. It's like school over everything. You breathe, you live school. Like that was their main focus for us. My father himself was highly educated. He was a PhD in chemical engineering, which is why he came to Detroit to pursue that. And so, yeah, sports did not, you know, run in my family at all, unfortunately. And I had nobody to encourage me and to, you know, to tell me, hey, you know, like move your body, do this, do that. You'll feel great. You'll feel so good about yourself. I had nobody to tell me that. And so I didn't look for it, you know? And I thought running was a punishment in high school. And so I hated it. And I always skip it. I always try to skip it as much as I can, or I would like huff and puff through it. And it's funny now how I literally sign up to run 26 miles for fun. It's crazy to me how that is.
Looking back, do you wish you had had that outlet of running or sports at an earlier age, or are you pretty content with the trajectory it has had in your life?
No, I wish I did have a, you know, a more active role in that back then. I really do. Like I said, I just had no one to push me, no one to tell me that it's going to be really awesome when you move your body. And the most I did was, you know, bike ride outside and play basketball with my neighbors. You know, that was like, you know, neighborhood kid stuff. That was all. I couldn't stand being in gym class, actually. I guess for me, what I'm seeing when I say this, it's the fact that I like doing it on my own terms and not having someone on my back telling me to run 2 miles at this pace at this time, or you fail. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And that also makes sense just knowing your story, because I know you started running in a way that was very much focused on your mental health. I understand you started running because of postpartum depression. Was that a phrase, postpartum depression, that you were using at the time? That did you acknowledge that? Tell me about that.
I did not acknowledge it at the time. I didn't say it out loud. I knew I had some form of it, or what they call the blues, the baby blues. I had something of that sort, but when it goes on after 6 months after you deliver is when they call it postpartum depression. And I think I had that with my first. I didn't start running until after I had my third. And that's when I discovered the gym, and I discovered that they had babysitting at the gym. And that was like, what? That's crazy. So I enrolled, because at the time I had two under two. So I had two kids under 2 years old.
Cannot imagine.
When I discovered that the gym had a babysitting, I was like, heck yeah. So even if it was just an hour a day, I mean, oh my God, I can't even tell you the relief I felt just by going for an hour a day. And I started with Zumba, believe it or not. Wow. Zumba classes. So everybody starts, you know, somewhere, right? And everybody has their own story to tell. Sure.
So how did Zumba turn into running? Because as you mentioned, I mean, you hated running as a child. So how did that, you know, going to the gym eventually morph into what you do now?
Yeah. Actually, I started going to Zumba, and then I noticed next door the classes were boxing and strength training. And I was so curious as to what was going on next door. Like, I wanted a part of that. Zumba was starting to get boring for me. I didn't find myself growing in it. You know, you just come to class, do your Zumba and go. But even though I felt great and I love dancing, especially like I grew up with belly dancing, you know, you go to parties and we dance Arabic, you know, and it's a part of my culture. So that's why I loved Zumba so much. I related to it a lot, but at the same time, I wasn't growing. So when I discovered the classes next door, they had boxing and weightlifting. I was like, oh my God, I totally want to do that. So I actually went. And I started doing that, and I was like, this feels amazing to push your body more and more, lift heavier and heavier. Yeah. It came very alluring to me. So as far as your question goes, how did I get into running through that? Well, my son's school, my oldest son, they were partaking in a 1 mile race, and that race had many distances, right? It's a local race to us here. It's very famous for all the schools. And so the gym teacher asked me, she said, well, Rahaf, why don't you come run you know, the 5K, the 10K with us. No, she said 5K. Mm-hmm. She's a runner herself. And I was like, what is that? What is that? And how much does it cost? Like, I didn't know anything about training. Sure. I had no clue about gear, nothing. I showed up to race day. I registered for the 10K, not the 5K, because I thought I would get more for my money.
Like a longer race.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think like 5Ks are so serious and just as tough as 10Ks, you know.
Yeah.
But I literally trained for just a month before that. I showed up to race day with cotton and everything, but I had the most amazing time of my life. It was like being reborn. You know, I felt like $1 million at the finish line. I'll never forget it. I came back the year after, I did the half marathon. The year after that, I did the full marathon. And after that, I was just hooked to the full marathon distance. And I had completed 11 marathons after that.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a unique story. Because I mean, I started running when I was a very young kid. So I didn't have that, you know, finding running as an adult. But I feel like a lot of people who I've spoken with who did find running as an adult, it wasn't that like love at first sight that you describe yeah. necessarily. So that's very cool to hear how it really was yeah. for you.
Yeah.
So skipping ahead a bit, I mean, you've told the story of you were on Women's Running magazine mm-hmm. in 2016 mm-hmm. on the cover. You were mm-hmm. the first ever hijabi to appear on the cover of a fitness mm-hmm. magazine. And I know you've told the story. There were a lot of steps that went into that. There was a Runner's World cover search that you were a part of before mm-hmm. that. And there's so much I want to get into in your story that some of that background, I'll just kind of leave some links in the show notes for folks who aren't familiar, because there's so much more closer to the now. But I would love to hear about just when you finally got on that cover of Women's yep. Running. I'm sure that came with a wash of emotions just because it was such a long road. Could you take me into your headspace at that moment and what that meant to you?
My gosh. It feels like a million years ago, but at the same time, it feels like yesterday. It's weird because I still remember every single emotion and how I was feeling. I was actually in Berlin when the cover came out. I was running my World Marathon Majors. It was my second, mm-hmm. time. And
of course, you've done all of them, correct?
Yes, I've done all six of the world majors. Yes, I've done all six, and I'm the first Styrian to do so. Wow. They rank it by country, so like there's like 3,000 Americans that finished it. There's like, you know, 400, you know, Australians that finished it. I'm just giving a rough, you know, estimate. So I'm the first Styrian in the world to finish all six world majors. And yeah, so when the cover came out, I was first, they contacted me and said, well, we want to feature you in the magazine as one of the, the 10 women that are making a huge impact and breaking stereotypes. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, I'd love to. Then they emailed me the next day and they said, you know what? We actually want you on the cover. And I was like, what? So it blew my mind away. Honestly, even though I was working towards it, with Runner's World cover search that did not work out. And I was so disappointed. I started crying about that failed attempt. But when this worked out, it was like truly God works in mysterious ways. And he'll make it work out when he wants it to work out for you. And he knows what's best for you. So at the time, it was amazing when that worked out for me. And being that it's a women's running magazine made it extra special too, you know. It took off. I can't even tell you, Emma, the news outlets that came to me internationally speaking was I was floored. I couldn't keep up with my emails, my text messages, people, journalists contacting me. Believe it or not, the Ellen Show contacted me.
Really?
I swear.
You didn't go on the Ellen Show, did you?
No, I didn't go on it. No, that didn't work out, but they contacted me. I mean, I'm telling you, it was crazy. It was crazy. Everything that was just coming my way at the time, and it opened up so many opportunities for me. It actually opened up the door for me to run Boston. Highlands is a homeopathic medicine. I hope I'm saying that right. They're a company that make medicine. And so every year they sponsor a team for Boston, and then they contacted me right straight away after that, after my cover went out.
Wow.
And it was my dream to run Boston. Dream. And then this literally falls into my lap. Like, you know, I'm truly blessed with all the opportunities that came my way through that, through being a cover model for Women's Running Magazine.
So I know that, of course, this meant so much to you to be on the cover, and you mentioned all of the outlets that reached out afterwards. I know a lot of what you do and a lot of the importance has to do with representation and ending stereotypes against covered Muslim American women. Has there been any story of a person you've met or a message you've received that has made you realize the impact of you on the cover?
Oh my gosh, so many. After the cover went out, I had so many Muslim women reach out to me and tell me like how proud they were of me, and they never imagined ever that this would, you know, actually happen. And to see it happening is really crazy. I grew up in the 90s and I had zero hijabi models to look up to. Super, like, people breaking stereotypes. I don't like to use models because it's, you know, it gives a negative instance. It's not what I do. Modeling is not what I do. It's more about shattering stereotypes and breaking barriers and women empowerment, fighting against discrimination. Especially now I have a platform, and I'm blessed to have that platform, and I'm working hard to end discrimination and against Muslims, especially Muslim women who covered. We cover our head with a scarf called a hijab. And that is something that we do on our own choice, contrary to what most people believe. And this is part of our religion. And it's all about looking inwards, focusing on yourself inwards and not so much on the exterior. So when you wear hijab, you realize your actions have meaning to it. Every action you do has a meaning behind it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to be covered and to realize that. And I hope to teach my daughter that as well when she decides to wear hijab. And so when I was on the cover, I had Muslim women who were converts who reached out to me, who said, you know, I was in track in high school and I was not Muslim at the time, but now that I'm Muslim and covered, I've never ran. And I never thought it would be possible to run again, but seeing you gives me hope. I had a girl actually reach out to me who was newly hijab. She just wore hijab. She just converted to Islam, and she's a high school athlete. And she stopped. Her parents want her to stop running after she wore hijab. Her parents are not Muslim. I told her, no, you can do it. You know, talk to them, sit them down, let them understand that wearing hijab is your choice to cover, and that you can absolutely partake in sports, even while covered. And I spoke to her on my DMs a few times, and I sent her, you know, free metal hanger that I make and with my logo on it, and supported her as much as I can online virtually. I forgot what state she was in. But yeah, it's stories like that that keep me coming back for more. It's stories like that that want me to blog more, because I know that it's making an impact. And that to me is priceless.
Well, it certainly is making impact. And I appreciate you sharing what the hijab means to you and the significance of that. Thank you. And you also mentioned your daughter and a little bit about what you want to share with your daughter. And I'm curious, because you are a mother, how your identity as a mother has affected the way you view this work, and maybe especially as a mother of a daughter.
Oh my gosh, it means so much to me to give her that. Do you know what I mean? So every time I fundraise for orphans or Syrian refugees while training for marathons, I always tell her what I'm doing. I always, you know, show her every magazine I'm published in. That's why I try to save them all. I don't save them all for my own ego. I save them for my kids, especially for her. I want her to see that, you know, women have rights, women have a choice, women have, in Islam, women have rights and women have choice, especially. This is actually within our religion for the woman to choose what she wants to do with her life. And so this is something very important for me to teach her that. And you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I don't have a career, even though I'm a you know, entrepreneur slash freelancer slash speaker? Is that something you can sit down your kids and tell them, hey, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a teacher, this is what I do? It's different, you know? So I have to make sure I tell my kids and show my kids what I'm doing and all the opportunities that come my way, just so I can teach them and say, hey, mom can do it. You can too. Put your mind to something and you can do it. You can accomplish it. It doesn't matter that I don't have, like, you know, a career or whatever. You can do stuff to make an impact in the world, just as anyone else with a career can.
Well, yeah, you mentioned your stay-at-home mom, and being a stay-at-home mom is awesome. And I think stay-at-home parents have the hardest jobs, but you also say you don't have a career, and I would beg to differ. I think knowing everything that you do, but it's important that you say that, because you've been in countless different magazines and news outlets. You've done a TED talk. And I just realized yesterday that you're not sponsored for what you do. Yeah. And I realized that when you shared it on Twitter and Instagram. I'm just going to read it, if you don't mind. You wrote, I don't know what else I can do or to what brand I can pitch to become a paid ambassador. All my BIPOC athletic counterparts have sponsorships, excuse me, except for my Muslim hijabis. Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. What inspired you to write that post?
Oh, out of utter frustration and exhaustion. It's like I am talking to the wall. Like, literally, brands that I reach out to, I get rejected left and right. I mean, I've worked with so many brands before, like New Balance briefly. I've worked with Reebok. I had a huge thing. Reebok didn't pay me a single cent. They kept giving me new shoes, and they did send me on a trip to New York for their campaign, which they did not pay me for. I did some stuff for them with that campaign and didn't receive a single cent out of them. I did work with Adidas. It was a one-off thing for a campaign. And then after I worked with them, I said, hey, because I co-created the hijab, Adidas hijab. And I said, hey, you know, why don't you guys sponsor me? You know, I could work with you. We could turn this into a long-term relationship rather than a one-off thing, which they paid me for, but it was just a one-off thing. And I was like, you know, because I noticed they have ambassadors. And I said, you know, I could love to be an ambassador. I know I'm not a pro athlete. I know I'm not an Olympian, but I can have just as much impact as a pro athlete or an Olympian. I am a stay-at-home mom. I have three kids. I am a Muslim hijabi woman, the first on the cover of magazine, a TEDx speaker. I fundraised $33,000 for various causes.
I just want to highlight that that's not unprecedented. Like, brands are looking for folks, for athletes who aren't pro athletes, who have a platform such as yours.
They continue to send me free shoes, and they rejected my offer and said they don't have the budget. So, yeah. And I had to step up for myself, Emma. I said, no, no more free shoes. I am not reviewing shoes for you. Despite me reviewing shoes for them for 2 years, they keep sending me the wrong size. Like, how much more salt to the wound can I take? You know what I mean? It's like, this is when I have to say no. No, no means no. Like, you either sponsor me as an athlete or pay me or whatever you want to do. But yeah, no, yeah, I'm not doing free stuff for you anymore. And so, because you know what, Emma, every time, you know, Muslim woman, it's hard to try to put an outfit together. And every time I do put an outfit together and I post it online, I go for a run and I train, people ask me, where did you get those, you know, nice, loose, baggy pants? Because as Muslim women, we prefer to wear looser pants. We wear long sleeves always. We cover from head to toe. Everything except for our hands and face should be covered. And you know, people are looking for nice, creative ways to cover while going out on a run. And so, you know what? It's in at brands. It's in their favor that they sponsor someone like me, because that's where the money is, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is the market, you know, when you, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, it's in their favor to have someone like me, because it'll make it easier for a Muslim woman to see someone else wearing it and then buying it. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's like, especially when it's items that it's hard to find, like long shirts or baggy, you know, pants, stuff like that. So it's, you know, people think Muslim women are not into fashion, but we so are. We still are. So, yeah,
I mean, I can't imagine your frustration with all of this. And, and you mentioned that companies, they are missing out on an opportunity.
Yeah.
I think that the frustration, it seems like there are many parts of it. First of all, like, that it would be in companies' favor to do this. But second of all, women, and especially BIPOC women, and maybe especially Muslim women, too often have to do unpaid work. So could you go a little bit into that and like what the sponsorship would mean to you in that realm?
You know, it's priceless. I know my impact in the work I've done, like fundraising for, you know, I'm going to be fundraising for orphans next week during Ramadan. And I know this kind of work, for example, a pro or an Olympian might not have time for. Do you know what I mean? So sponsoring somebody like me, who's a stay-at-home mom, who, you know, will have time to, I will give my all to like a brand and work for them and have that time to do that, you know, and having that impact that I know that I can, and having the platform to create that diversity within that brand that is so needed, so needed. Like you said, or like my Twitter said, there is literally no Muslim hijabi except for the Nike sponsored Olympic fencer, but she's an Olympian, you know.
Exactly.
I'm coming from, you know, a non-Olympian, non-pro, you know, athlete. And I'm starting to tell myself, and I have to repeat it over and over again, that my rate is based off of my skill, not your budget. So I have to remind myself that every time I get an email from a brand that wants to give me free shoes.
I love that. And I think that that's a phrase that, you know, I think so many women of marginalized identities should hear and write down and repeat. I love that phrase.
Same opportunities as our white counterparts, especially in this freelancing world. I have to be very blunt and say it, but this is the truth. I'm just realizing how discriminatory it is. You know, the more I'm in it, you know, you realize that. And I have to speak up. I have to speak up for myself and for the women who are going to come after me. You know what I mean? I have to let them see, hey, this is what's going on. You know, protect yourself, defend yourself, and speak up.
So. And as much as I'm sure it's, you know, it's a big burden to feel like you have to, you know, tweet that out and share that statement, I know that there are so many women who are grateful for it. Another thing that you mentioned earlier is that you're going to raise money for orphans. Could you tell me a bit about that? Because I know you've raised money for so many different organizations in the past, but I'd love to hear about this upcoming effort.
Of course. So it is a organization called Orphans in Need. Okay. And it's based in the UK. However, they are sponsoring. What they do is they go around and they sponsor orphans around the world in underdeveloped countries. So, and they have many different kinds of things that they fundraise for, like feeding the fasting people who don't have food, or just different various causes. And the one I'm partaking with them, or, you know, partnering with them with, is sponsoring orphan girls around various countries. And that's something I'm excited about to partake in. And hopefully that will launch next week. I'll have a link on that next week.
Awesome. So when this episode is out, that will have launched, and we'll leave a link so anyone who's listening can go check it out and see how they can donate as well.
Yes.
And I want to talk a little bit, like I mentioned, you've raised money, especially through your running, through various different organizations. Mm-hmm. One cause that you have raised money for is the refugee crisis. You've specifically raised money for Syrian refugees and Palestinian refugees. And I feel like the refugee crises are not often talked about in the running community. Like, we raise so many different causes, but refugees are not a common one. Yes. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I think there's a lot going on, especially lately with the Black Lives Matter movement. And then you have the Asian hate. I feel like there's just a lot going on. I mean, you know, people tell me, well, we have to focus on what's going on here, you know, before we focus on what's going on internationally. And I agree with them to some extent. Like, for sure, we have to, you know, partake in these movements as well, and and defend our minority communities. At the same time, everybody feels like they want to fundraise for what's important to them. So like homelessness or like women in shelters, battered women, whatever it is, you know. So for me at the time, back in 2017, I felt like we needed to fundraise for Syrian refugees because the war in Syria started 2010, I believe. So it's been over 10 years where literally, you know, Syrians are being attacked by their president. They're being killed. They're being, the country turns off the water and electricity on its people. And so it's literally the worst humanitarian issue right now. And well, second to Yemen, because I know Yemen is having issues as well. But and so I felt like at the time that there were no charities that were focusing on that, especially in the running world. So when I went when I went on the Boston website, I didn't see any charities for refugees, let alone Syrian refugees. So I wrote to them and said, hey, why is this? They said, well, you have to. It was such a process to get into the BAA, to get your charity into the BAA. Mm-hmm. And I didn't run a charity. So I had to go out first and seek a charity. And it had to be in Boston. And it had to be health and fitness oriented.
The charity has to be based in Boston. Is that yes. What you're saying? Yes. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, at least. So I don't know if it changed now. But then I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy, you know. This is a lot of steps I have to do, and you have to apply a year in advance, and you have to go through all these steps to get into the BAA if you're a charity. Because I was trying to get them to get more, you know, refugee charities on their page for more runners to run for and to raise money for. But then lo and behold, I got this opportunity to run with Highlands, and they sponsored me. They paid for my bib. They paid for my stay, and it was so nice. I felt like I needed to give back. So what I do is that I went and I joined forces with Syrian American Rescue Network. It's a charity here in Michigan for Syrians who fled Syria, the country where I was born, where my parents are from, and came to Michigan. So I said, I want to raise money for you guys. I'm going to be training for Boston, and I won't give a single cent to BAA or anybody else because I'm not raising money for BAA, and everything will go to you. So I raised at the time, my initial goal was $5,000. I raised $16,000 in 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. It made the news. It made the CNN news. It made global news, BBC. I don't know. It was just at the time we also had a crazy thing called a Muslim ban going on in this country. Right. So people were very furious about that. And I think that helped my cause a lot. And people were just, you know, donating, you know, people care about these issues. It's not like they don't care. They care.
They do care, but I just don't. Maybe this is my own experiences, but I just don't feel like refugees are something that's often talked about in the running community. I mean, it's an issue I think about because my mother teaches refugees and it's, you know, very much on my radar, but I just don't hear these conversations happening in
not at all
the running community. How do we change that? Like, how do you think if a runner is listening and they're interested in getting involved in organizations that help refugees,
is to reach out to the marathons, reach out to the race director, reach out to the program director of that marathon and say, hey, we want more charities that fundraise for refugees, period. It doesn't have to be refugees overseas, because I can understand people don't want to like send their money overseas, blah blah blah. It could be refugees here in the States who are coming to the United States to seek a better life. You know, that's what I did. I raised money for these Syrians who were coming to Michigan, literally my home state, in my backyard, to start a new life, who are escaping war, who are escaping a brutal regime that's killing them off. You know, so reach out to your race directors, reach out to these, you know, and tell them, hey, I know this charity. Is it possible that I can run for this charity and raise money for this cause while, you know, training for your marathon? Well, you know, they might ask for a percentage of that funds or what have you. But, you know, I think it's a why not? Just reach out and ask. you know, you'll be doing so much good in the world. So
I just hearing about all of these, you know, organizations that you've written, causes that you've raised money for, and how much money you've raised, and just how important representation is for you. It feels like, you know, not only do you have a big heart, of course, but you're also extremely tenacious, and you really, when you get your mind set on something, yeah, you work hard towards it. And yeah, I know, I mean, I learned in your TED talk that you've also received some extremely violent Islamophobic messages in response to your advocacy. So yeah, I'm curious how you keep going and keep representing covered Muslim American women in the face of often hate.
Yeah, those hate messages I received when I was on the cover of Women's Writing Magazine was so bad. I've never in my life read things like that. You know, I had people on Twitter telling me to go blow myself up. I had people telling me to go run a marathon back home, quote unquote, while wearing a suicide vest. It's like the most brutal thing. I'm like, wow. Like, it was so bad that I had to tell Women's Running Magazine. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Because they were receiving hate too. And I apologized to them. They said, no, don't apologize. It's not your fault. And it was like, it's like, no wonder brands don't feature Muslim women, because it's like they're going to get all this hate, you know. But I feel like we need to stand up to that, though. We really need to stand up to it. Ignore it. Those people are all trolls. They're hiding behind their screens and they have nothing else to do with their life but sit down and, you know, type out hate to other people. It's crazy because they hate it when they see a woman of faith, you know, stand up and defend herself. People hate that. I don't know why. It's challenging those misconceptions that people have about who the Muslim woman is what my mission is all about.
I almost have no words hearing all that. I'm so sorry you've had to go through that. And I'm so sorry you've had to apologize for it, or felt that you've had to apologize for it as well. But I want to talk about, you know, you've done such positive work in the face often of hate, of hateful messages. And one thing you're currently doing is you're a coach and you do quite a lot of work to empower the Muslim American running community. I want to hear about your current project, the Ramadan Challenge that you're doing.
Yeah. So I've been working with Runkeeper for a couple of months now, and I approached them and I said, hey, you know what? I love Ramadan is coming up. I'd love to do a Ramadan challenge. Ramadan is a month, 30 days where Muslims fast from sunrise to sundown, no food or water for 17 hours a day. It just depends on where in the world you're located. For the States, it's about 17 hours a day is when we fast from food and water. And it's a way to really connect to our religion, connect to God. If you're a Muslim, it is required for you to fast unless you have a medical condition. You know, unless you're pregnant or nursing, or some people have diabetes, they can't do it. You know, that's okay. But if you're, you know, otherwise healthy Muslim, then you are required to fast. No questions asked. And so, you know, some Muslims take this as a time to do more charity. Hence why, partnering up with the orphans in need during Ramadan, because it's believed that our charity work is multiplied in the eyes of God, and doing good deeds, is heavily weighed on your scale, on your good deed scale during this month. So people scramble to do so much good deed this month. We also read a lot from our Quran, and we also attend nightly prayers at the mosque. So, you know, fasting can leave you depleted and laying on the sofa and, oh my God, I'm so hungry and thirsty. So I came up with this challenge, like, let's do 1 mile a day, just 1 mile. And it doesn't matter what you do. You can walk, you can jog, you can run, you can even cycle that 1 mile. It doesn't matter. Just get up and do something while you're fasting. So I approached Runkeeper and I said, hey, I have this idea for 1 mile a day during Ramadan, and calling it the Ramadan Challenge with Runkeeper. What do you guys think? And they were so excited about it. So excited. I was like, okay, great. And, you know, mind you, this is the first time I ever lead an initiative like this. I mean, I've helped organize 5Ks in my neighborhood from the Muslim community, but this is the first time I lead a challenge during Ramadan. And so it's taking off. I have over 100 participants. Yeah. My kids.
Wow.
In it now too. My daughter does
your kids' school.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, even I have some non-Muslims doing it. So it's really fun. And I feel like, you know, why not, you know, get your behind off the sofa and move your body. And it's really rewarding. I love it. And I love working with, you know, people like Runkeeper who are open to these ideas. You know, they don't know what Ramadan is. They've probably never heard of it before. And they're not Muslim. And so me giving them this idea gives them a glimpse of how I live and my world during Ramadan. And so I love it. And it's priceless to me. You can't put a price on that. You know, it's challenging these stereotypes about Muslims that I love to do. And this is why I do what I do.
So Rahaf, you started doing this work in 2015, I believe, challenging the stereotypes and pushing towards representation of covered Muslim American women. Looking back, well, this is a two-part question. Looking back, what are you most proud of? And then looking forward, what legacy do you want to leave on the running community?
Good question. Looking back, what is it that I'm most proud of? Most proud of raising money for Syrian refugees. I have to bring that up again. I know I talked about it a lot. It's literally, I've never had any experience in raising money for nobody. I'm literally just a stay-at-home mom, a very ordinary person. Anyone can do it. And I never thought that I could do it because you see all these organizations and big-time celebrities doing it, big-time athletes doing it, but I never thought an ordinary person like me can do that. And when I put forth my link and put forth my initiative, people scrambled to help. And it was so amazing to see how much good there is in the world, despite all the hate that's going on, and how much people actually want to help. Because that's not highlighted in the media, Emma. These good stories are not, I mean, it'll be a headline for a day or two, but it's not the focus. If you open up your you know, news this evening, it's all about shootings, it's all about this, it's all about that, it's all about, you know, all these bad news, but nobody wants to highlight good news. I just don't know why. It's not,
especially this past year and a half.
I mean, well, those causes, yes, we know that those causes have, you know, an impact behind them, but at the same time we need to highlight good news, like good things that people are doing to shatter stereotypes and dismantle, you know, racism.
For sure. And what goals do you have? What legacy do you want to leave? And I guess that's a weird question. What goals and hopes do you have for your work in the future?
The first thing that comes to my mind, what I do is very unique. It doesn't really have a name to it. Like I said, it's different. It's not really a career. So I want to leave that behind for other Muslim women. Maybe, you know, maybe we might have a star in the Olympics who's Muslim, who covers from head to toe like I do while running. So, or not that I'm, you know, ever going to be in the Olympics, but I'm just saying, like, it's nice to leave that kind of legacy behind and be like, hey, this is what I did. This is what you can do too. This is how I communicated with brands. This is how I stood up for myself. You can do it too. Like, this is the kind of legacy I want to leave. And not only for you know, athletes, but for my own daughter, for our own daughters, you know, for my niece, for example. Like, you know, that's the kind of legacy I want to leave behind. To say Muslim women matter and, you know, just stand up for yourself.
I love that. So Rahaf, you've been very generous of your time. I know it's a very busy week for you, but if you have any time left, I'd love to do a few fast, rapid fire questions, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So you've run all the World Marathon Majors. Which one is your favorite?
Oh my gosh, that's a hard one. Tokyo, for sure. Tokyo,
cool.
Very unique experience.
Do you have a favorite book you've read or a movie you've watched in the past year?
Oh my God, I watch so many movies, like documentaries. I mostly watch athletic documentaries.
Ooh.
Oh my God, that's a hard one. I don't know. What's that one called about that cyclist that took steroids to test himself to see?
Oh, the one about Lance Armstrong?
Yeah.
No, not I like, watched it too, and I'm not remembering the name of the documentary.
But yeah, I watched so many. I don't know what comes to my mind right now. A Thousand Sons was a really great novel. I love reading about world history. although it's fiction, but it's based off of, you know, real facts.
I also loved that book.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite pre-run snack?
Dates.
Ooh, me too. Love dates. Do you do like the medjool, like the very?
Yeah. Like, the juicy fat ones.
Yum.
Yeah. Very good. So good for you.
Yeah. And the last question that I ask everyone on this podcast is, why is sport a powerful platform for social change?
Oh my gosh, that's a loaded question, Emma. It's challenging those misconceptions that people have about Muslim women, and that seeing me out there on the start line, covered from head to toe on a 90 degree day, by choice, by the way, because no one's forcing me to cover, is truly what empowers me to come back for more. It's crossing finish lines and realizing that we're all the same. You know, we all bleed the same. We all need food and air. We're all just the same human beings. We all want to cross the finish lines at the end of the day. And that's something that we have in common, whether, no matter your skin color or your faith or what you believe in. It's so many things, Emma. It's so many things. It means a lot to me and to my community as well to be crossing these finish lines. But I mean, I always say, if you organize your life around your passion, you can turn your passion into your story, and then turn your story into something bigger and something that matters. And this is a quote that I live by, and my passion is, you know, shattering stereotypes about us, you know.
That's so beautiful. What a beautiful quote to live by. I mean, I want to start living by that now as well. And Rahaf, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you for everything that you do. It's truly important for the running community and also for the world. So thank you. And thank you for coming on today.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Social Sport. In the show notes, you can learn more about Rahaf and follow links to some other articles and media on her work. If you enjoyed this episode, there is something you can do to support the show that is completely free, and it will take maybe 3 minutes. You can head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave Social Sport a rating and a review. That would help me increase the show's presence so much. As always, you can follow the show via Instagram at Social Sport Pod, and you can subscribe to the Social Sport newsletter at socialsport.substack.com. Have an awesome week, everyone. Stay sporty and keep resisting.